Good morning and welcome to Overeaters Anonymous, a Vision for You Big Book Study. My name is Kathy Kay and I am a recovered compulsive overeater. Today is Thursday, December 5th, 2019. We are reading in the Big Book and we are on page 73, the last full paragraph, which begins, "Psychologists are inclined to agree with us." Today's readers are Laura R. on the 12 Steps, Jerry L. on the 12 Traditions, and reading the text are Leslie M., Mo H., and Robin P. Our reference number for yesterday's 10 a.m. meeting is 13,757. And for this morning's 7 a.m. meeting, the reference number is 13,763. OA Preamble. Overeaters Anonymous is a fellowship of individuals who, through shared experience, strength, and hope, are recovering from compulsive overeating. We welcome everyone who wants to stop eating compulsively. There are no dues or fees for members. We are self-supporting through our own contributions, neither soliciting nor accepting outside donations. OA is not affiliated with any public or private organization, political movement, ideology, or religious doctrine. We take no position on outside issues. Our primary purpose is to abstain from compulsive eating and compulsive food behaviors and to carry the message of recovery through the 12 steps of OA to those who still suffer. Our sole purpose. OA's fifth tradition states, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. At a Vision for You Big Book Study, our message is that people who suffer from compulsive overeating can recover through abstinence and the practice of the 12 steps and 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. I will now ask Laura R. to read the 12 steps of OA.
Good morning, Kathy. Thank you so much. And these are the 12 steps of Overeaters Anonymous. 1, we admitted we were powerless over food, that our lives had become unmanageable. 2, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. 3, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. 4, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. 5, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrong. 6, we're entirely ready to have God remove all of these defects of character. 7, humbly asked him to remove our shortcomings. 8, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. 9, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10, continued to take personal inventory and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood him, praying only for knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out. 12, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to compulsive overeaters and to practice these principles in all of our affairs. Thanks, and I pass.
Thank you, Laura R. I'll now ask Jerry L. to read the 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous.
Good morning. 1, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon OA unity. 2, for our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God as he may express himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. 3, the only requirement for OA membership is a desire to stop eating compulsively. 4, each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or OA as a whole. 5, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. 6, an OA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the OA name. to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. 7, every OA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. 8, Overeaters Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9, OA, as such, ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10, Overeaters Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues. Hence, the OA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11, our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, films, television, and other public media of communication. 12, anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all these traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. Thank you, and I pass.
Thank you very much, Jerry L. How our meeting works. Our meeting focuses on the directions for recovery described in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. We read a paragraph or two from the literature, and then we stop and share what was read. Anyone can share, but we ask that you keep your sharing to the topic and literature we are discussing, and that you keep your share to approximately 3 minutes. Singleness of purpose reminds us to identify as compulsive overeaters only. Our abstinence requirement for moderators is 1 year and for readers is 6 months. There is no abstinence requirement for sharing on topic. This meeting does request that your sharing be directly linked to what was read. We are sharing what the directions in the Big Book mean to us. To share, press star 1 to unmute. Once you are done sharing, let us know by saying pass, then press star 1 to mute your phone again. In order to have a quiet meeting, everyone's phone except the speaker should be muted. Again, today we are resuming our study on page 73, the last full paragraph, and I'll ask Leslie M. to get us started.
Good morning, Kathy K. Thank you for your service and thank you to Team Thursday. My name is Leslie M. I'm a recovered compulsive overeater from Long Island, New York. Psychologists are inclined to agree with us. We have spent thousands of dollars for examinations. We know but few instances where I have given these doctors a fair break. We have seldom told them the whole truth, nor have we followed their advice. Unwilling to be honest with these sympathetic men, we were honest with no one else. Small wonder many in the medical profession have a low opinion of alcoholics and their chance for recovery. And the thing that hits me in this paragraph is the honesty. I certainly know for myself that I couldn't be honest with myself and therefore I couldn't be honest with anyone else. You know, it says here, you know, we seldom told them the whole truth, nor have we followed their advice. And this, you know, for me, went for any doctor. I wasn't honest with any of my medical professionals. That's one thing that I have decided that this past year, that I'm going to be honest with all my medical professionals, whether they accept the idea of Overeaters Anonymous or not. I'm going to tell them what I do. And one of them was very, you know, took my number and some information and, you know, said that if she had anyone else that was interested, she would have them call me so that I can be as useful and do service where I can. The thing for me was that when I finally came back and was ready to do this work, I had contacted a sponsor and she gave me an initial assignment. And in that initial assignment, I had to fully concede to myself that I was a compulsive overeater. And I found by the end of that assignment that I wasn't really willing to do that. And the reason was that, you know, I had lied. I just lied to everyone. So I took some time to, there were certain people, some family and some friends, and I was actually still sponsoring someone at that time, that I had to, you know, own it and say, you know, by the way, I haven't been abstinent. And that was a tough thing for me, but that was, I found for myself that that was the first gift that I actually could receive from my higher power, was that gift of honesty and being able to just say, yeah, this is who I am and this is what I've done. And to be able to, at this point, you know, being that we're in the fifth step, having looked at in the fourth at the facts, you know, a fact-facing and a fact-finding mission, that now I can look back at my life and see the mistakes I've made and just accept them as, yes, I've done these things, you know, without there being a whole lot of emotional attachment to it or judgment or making it a moral issue. It was simply the things that I've done. So I can look back at that and I can look back at all the lying and just accept that as part of where I needed to be in order to get where I am today. And for that, I am truly grateful. And now that now I can be honest with people and I can tell people what I do and where I come from. And with that, I pass. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Leslie M. Okay, I'd like to take names of people who would like to share, and if you could try to do it one at a time, that would be great.
Tana W.
Okay, I heard the first person I heard was somebody W. Who was that?
Donna W.
Donna W. Okay.
Patty A.
Was it Patty K?
D as in David.
Patty D. Okay. I'm sorry, it's very horrible. Try again, please. Hello? Hello?
Mammoth H.
Mammoth H.
Melanie C.
Okay. Did I hear Mary Ann, somebody?
Melanie C. And then Marian Rifka.
Oh, Marian Rifka. Okay. Marian Rifka and Melanie C. Okay. Let me read who I have, and then I know there's some others. Donna W., Patty D., Ma'am, somebody, H, who is that? Who is with the last initial H?
That was Marian Rifka H.
Oh, okay, Marian Rifka H. And Melanie C. So I can take two more. Somebody D, who was it? Who was it? Okay, I heard Stacy, was that Stacy K.?
Stacy K, yes, ma'am.
Yeah, but somebody before that, somebody D? I'm sorry, it's coming through very garbled. Can you try again? I'm not hearing it. I don't know. I'm going to, after Donna gets started, I'm going to call back in and see if I could get a better... Donna C? Okay, let's start with Donna W.
Hi, this is Donna W. Oh, sorry.
Go ahead, Donna.
Okay, great. Happy, what is it, Thursday, everybody. So grateful for my abstinence and recovery today. Actually, I just did my fourth and fifth step last weekend. So grateful that I am getting to, you know, I'm working through the steps as we're reading through them. You know, I've seen all sorts of therapists. I recently saw like a health coach. I've seen nutritionists. I've definitely seen a lot of therapists. I feel like seeing therapists, I have been honest, and it's helped me to be more honest with my fifth step because I'm so more comfortable revealing myself. But I have to say, you know, no matter how much money I've spent, they have never gotten that I'm an addict. You know, they always have these like, why don't you just try this? And you know, this last person I saw, I felt kind of like I was crazy because, you know, things that seem so obvious to her just don't work for me. So that's something, you know, I'd love to just pay someone some money and they could fix me, you know. I would just love that. But I'm an addict and I need a spiritual solution. And, you know, it's not a matter of just understanding myself, you know. self knowledge avails us nothing. So that's one of the things I find. Like, I have learned about myself through therapy, but it's never really helped my compulsive eating because they just don't get it. Let me see if there's anything else I want to turn over today. Just that my mother recently passed, and I have been really having a rough time, but I'm feeling like I'm a little bit out of the fog today, so I'm grateful for that and would greatly appreciate outreach calls. Donna W. in Palo Alto, California. Thank you, and I pass.
Thank you, Donna, and I'm so sorry for your loss. Patty D., please share with us.
Hi, good morning. Thank you for your service. This is Patty D., recovered compulsive overeater from Matthews, North Carolina. What struck me in this paragraph was first my own dishonesty that I had when I was trying to lose weight. Being a nurse myself, I knew about nutrition, but I still saw a nutrition counselor. And, you know, doing all that, you know, you need so many carbs, you need so much protein, you need this. That wasn't addressing my issue, obviously, as we all have probably experienced. And I didn't follow the advice, and I never told them about the tubs of icing that I ate and all this other stuff. So, yeah, I went through all that dishonesty. But the thing that I wanted to share was that as a nurse and as an operating room nurse, people in the medical profession really have a very low opinion of obese and morbidly obese people. And the people in the medical profession who are thin, we would have people who were really morbidly obese come in for surgery, and once they were asleep, they would say disparaging remarks about them and, you know, stay away from the Twinkies, or I can't believe we have to lift this person, and, you know, things like that. And I think even people in the medical profession don't get that so many of us, not all, but so many of us are addicts and needs help beyond a diet or willpower. And we need to educate them, and we need to show them the truth about it. And we can only do that through our own honesty. So that's what I wanted to share. And thank you, and I pass.
Thank you very much, Patty D. Marion Riska, please share with us.
Hi, good morning. It's Mary Muska H in New Jersey. Thank you so much, Kathy, for your service. I identified a lot with this reading. The first thing that came to mind is just this was my experience. You know, for me, my disease started as a teenager. I found myself binging uncontrollably and was very, very, very ashamed of this behavior, but never went to anyone for help because I didn't even realize it's like a thing. Like I didn't, it was really embarrassing. And in fact, I read up on bulimia a little bit, and it was only when I taught myself how to purge that I felt willing. I felt like I can go to anyone for help, you know, and instead of saying, hey, I have this problem, I can't stop binging, I was able to say, I have this problem, I can't stop throwing up. I keep making myself throw up, because that I knew was like a real illness. But who ever heard of someone that just can't stop eating? Like, how disgusting is that? And in fact, like I marvel to myself. I remember so clearly going to a therapist and talking about this. I mean, I went for a very long time and never getting anywhere because I wasn't telling her the truth. I remember her telling me, listen, if you stop purging, you'll see, you'll stop binging. Your only reason you're binging is because you keep, you know, ridding your body of all your nutrients and you need that food. And I knew deep inside that that can't be true because I was binging before this whole purging thing, but no way was I going to tell her that. And, you know, the other way that it applies to me is now in my program, I've been coming to these rooms for 7 years, almost 7 years now, and I love to make myself into this like big book guru, and I know everything, and I can help you, and I know the answers. And yeah, honestly, I know a lot of the big book, and that's great. But the bottom line is that in all this time that I've been here, I've never had what people call entire abstinence. You know, it was always, yeah, I'll be on my food plan, but I'm like eating part of my lunch early, or I'm taking a little bit of extra this, or I'm not quite doing, you know. And it was only recently that I was just really able to look at that and speak to my sponsor and start over with the steps in entire abstinence, because this is the only thing that's going to help me. And if I'm not honest about where I'm at, I'm not going to get anywhere. And that's what I found, basically. Like, I wasn't being entirely honest, and therefore I wasn't getting the entire solution. And I'm just grateful to be able to say that today. And with that, I'll pass. Thank you so much for this opportunity.
Thank you, Marion Riska. Melanie C., please share with us.
Hey, good morning, everyone. My name is Melanie C. I'm a recovered compulsive overeater calling in from Oregon. Hi, Kathy. Great to have you here. I'm going to look at this from maybe a little bit a different point of view. I'm pretty straightforward here and direct, saying I intentionally was dishonest. I intentionally, you know, omitted things, and no wonder these fellows couldn't, or women couldn't, help us in these situations, and they tried their level best. I'm going to tell you this side of it for me and my experience with it, and the experience that I had seeking psychologists and psychiatrists to work on this, which in the end didn't seem to give me the relief and the fulfillment that I have, that is coming to me by using the 12 steps as a treatment for my step two issues, being returned to sanity. I'm not sure, based on what I've learned, that I would know how to tell the truth. My self-centeredness verged on being narcissistic, and part of that is being a narcissistic person is that I believe my own lies. I had to for survival. And so when I would go before these folks, I told the truth to the best of my ability. Couldn't recognize when those little winces and nudges in my gut were saying, yeah, you know, there's more to it than that, or perhaps that's not the other side, or whatever, that sort of thing. They didn't stand a chance to be able to treat somebody like me. And as I've continued to be a student of this big book and do some more research and reading a bit more about William James, who's a psychologist who did special teachings in front of psychiatrists in great vast rooms and places to be able to encourage them. And William James worked with Bill W. Quite a bit in his recovery. So that's why I'm able to mention him here, is that there is a specific way in which to work with a mind like mine. That I tell the truth to the best of my ability, and when I know better, I do better under treatment. But in those particular times and places and spaces, I did not know the truth from the false. I was way too self-centered. I could not see another point of view, so therefore I was missing a huge chunk to be able to share with these folks in order for them to have any kind of help or effectiveness with us. And for me personally, the reality of that, to realize that, was tremendous. And the other side of that was to take away from the negativity about being a liar, about being directly a thief and those kinds of things, to know that it was part and parcel, not to take replace responsibility for it, because I certainly am taking responsibility for that in my 9-step amends and things like that. But it helped take away the burden of it being fundamentally a part of a forever broken character of mine, and which is not true. And now, with the help of this particular 12-step program and the fellowship here, when I know the truth, then I say it, and I can learn more about what the truth is day by day. Thanks. I'll pass.
Thanks so much, Melanie C. Donna B., please go ahead.
This is Donna B. Can you hear me okay?
I can. Thank you.
Oh, good. I'm sorry. I was so hard to hear when I was saying my name. So my name is Donna B. I'm a recovered compulsive overeater and bulimic. And I, too, wanted to focus in on honesty. And what I've learned as I've gone through the steps many times and as I've continued to work with my sponsor and to work with sponsees, I don't think that I was, in the case of my spiritual growth and my recovery from the eating disorder, an outright liar. There are certainly periods of my life in which I was definitely an outright liar. But in this aspect specifically, in seeking help, in wanting to be helped, I was not obscuring the honesty on purpose. I just didn't know what the truth was. The Big Book tells us that more will be revealed, that there is a long road of reconstruction ahead of us. There's so many parts of the Big Book in introducing a step or in introducing a practice or in introducing a prayer. It says we commence. Everything about this book tells me this is a beginning and that in continuing to do the work, more will be revealed. There are so many times that I have these awarenesses that I wasn't intentionally obscuring or hiding or avoiding. I just didn't know. And I think that the mystery behind this program, the higher power reveals to me the truth as I'm able to handle it, as I'm able to process it, as I'm connected to the right person that can help me get through it. So I hope that none of us live in this shame. I'm a liar. I'm dishonest. I can't tell the truth. I'm one of those people who won't get this program because I can't be rigorously honest. My prayer is that nobody live in that shame. And to trust that the truth we tell at this moment is the truth that we can tell at this moment. And if we stay committed to this program of recovery, more truth will be revealed. And our ability to express that and share that will grow in time. Thank you for letting me share.
Thank you so much, Donna B. And Stacy K., please share with us. Stacy, are you there? Press star 1 to unmute. Okay, we may have lost Stacy. Let me turn to taking 6 more names or so, and hopefully I can hear you better now that I redialed in.
Lisa J.R.
Michael M.
Okay, Lisa J.R., Michael M.
M.
Patty T.
Robin.
Patty T. Who came after Patty?
Robin P.
Robin P.
Penny C.
Penny C. And then I heard someone with the letter R at the name, at the end.
Laura.
Laura R. Okay. We'll stop there. And we'll see. If we have more time, I'll take more names afterwards. Thank you, everybody. Lisa J.R., please get us started with the second half.
Good morning, everybody. Lisa J.R. from Baltimore, Maryland. Thank you, Penny, for your service. So grateful to be here this morning. And, you know, when I grew up in a household with a dad that was a rageaholic, anything could set him off. So if you thought you were going to displease him, you know, it was easier to lie. So I cultivated the ability to lie to keep myself from getting, you know, reamed out over some insignificant thing. And as I grew up, you know, I was one of those people, if I was in a tight spot when my lips were moving, I was lying. And my higher power and I had to really, I had to roll my sleeves up and I had to abstain early on when I came into the rooms of recovery. I had to have abstinence from lying. And so, you know, the food came next, but I had to walk with some integrity because no wonder these folks, these poor folks, these medical professionals couldn't get anywhere with me. I couldn't tell the truth. I couldn't tell a truth when I was in marital counseling. I couldn't tell the truth when I was in counseling for my own issues, and just wasted a lot of time. So, you know, it talks about rigorous honesty in this program from the beginning. And, you know, we have to abstain from the lies. We have to get real. We have to get honest, or it will all be a half measure, as was said before, and it will avail us nothing and except a head full of big book knowledge. So with that, I pass. Thanks for letting me share.
Thank you, Lisa J.R. And before I ask Michael to speak, I want to remind those who may have joined us late that we're on page 73, the last full paragraph that begins, psychologists are inclined to agree with us. Okay, Michael N., please share
with us. Thank you so much for your service. And I must say I'm a little bit disappointed today. I am a retired 12-step therapist. Number one, I just have to say for myself, the AMA did not accept alcoholism as a disease till 1957. They're only just dealing with eating disorders and compulsive eating. And I train shrinks. Anyone older, like my age, never had a rotation in treatment as far as addiction. My doctor in detox did not know addiction. He knew meds. So I need to keep an open mind because I'm a person who, as in the big book, and Bill Wilson was in therapy, who said some are sicker than others. I am a sponsor. I am not a therapist or a counselor when I sponsor. I don't even tell my sponsees what I do unless they come to my house to read the big book and see my credentials. So I need to keep an open mind because I have, and I said this before, and this is really upsetting to me today, abuse issues in parochial school. Now, we all know what priests did to a lot of kids in the 50s and 60s. That is not something that you discuss on program in detail. That is something that you take to a professional, which would be like Bill Wilson said. And it's clear, Dr. Silkwood, and my God, Carl Jung, it's all in doctor's opinion. So for me, instead, I have quit until today, the debating society, and all I know is that I need to focus on me and realize that I was diagnosed with a mental illness that I always thought I had, and everybody said no, but it's only a form of it. I must go see a psychiatrist, you know, once a month or once every 3 months now. This psychiatrist changed my life. So I'm not bashing anybody. It says we go to any length, which means if I have been beaten, if I have been sexually abused, sponsors don't deal with that. They shouldn't because we're not therapists. So I'm suggesting for me, I must keep an open mind and getting upset because what I feel today is a lot of bashing, and that's not what vision does. And it really, I guess, pisses me off. So I need to calm down, so I'll do some meditation and writing because there are some people that are sicker than others with bipolar, schizophrenia, all these illnesses that need psychiatry. And God, in chapter 5, it says nothing, absolutely nothing happened in God's world by mistake. So thank you for letting me share. Have a great holiday season.
Thank you, Michael. And Patty T., please share with us.
Hi, did you call Patty T.?
I did, yes.
I was on reading. Thank you. Thank you so much for your service. And thank everybody for these wonderful shares today. My name is Patty T., and I'm recovering in Southern California. When I came into this program 13 and a half years ago, one of the first things I heard was that attending meetings will give you relief, working the steps will give you recovery. And when I would go to a therapist's office, because I too had childhood issues, I was taught from a very early age by a raging parent to lie with finesse, and to deny equally as well. So when I first started seeing my issues in my late 20s, I started therapy, and the first time I ever walked into a therapist's office and talked, I felt that relief I found in my first OA meeting, that relief of, oh my gosh, I can say this and no one will judge me. She can't tell anybody. I had that ability for the first time in my life. And it wasn't just about the food. It was about anything. It was about everything. Right? Because as we all know, the food is but the symptom. Life is the issue. The lying and the denial for me was my major issue as a human being. And then over the course of the years, I had more therapists, right? And none of them handled my food problem, but it was a therapist who said to me, a 12-step therapist, in fact, who said, I want you to go to OA because I'm afraid the insurance is going to cut you off. Because you haven't gotten better under my care. And I need to know you have someone to speak to about this problem. And so I came. She was my Eskimo. And even after my relapse, she encouraged me. I will never forget. She picked up a John Bradshaw book one day and waved it at me and said, you know what? I know that you want this all to be over, and I know you want to get through this period really fast. But you are doing exactly in your program what this man writes about. You are doing it. You are living and walking through it. Please continue. Don't stop. And you know what? It was 6 years of chronic relapse. And you know what? I got through it. And some of us do need outside help. We do. I did. I still do. But all of it became gelled and worked once I got into these steps. Once I started working these steps, like my hair was on fire. And wow, it's an amazing experience. So credit goes to everyone. Thanks for letting me share.
Thank you, Patty T. Robin P., please share with us.
Hi, thanks so much, Kathy. This is Robin P. I'm a very grateful recovered compulsive overeater in Vero Beach, Florida. You know, I believe that this is a disease of denial, just like it says, you know, and it's the one disease that tells me I don't have a disease. And the only person who believed me many times when I wasn't telling the truth was me. You know, when I was bulimic, I said I had very fast metabolism. And people would just look at me with these eyes of pity. And when I was anorexic, you know, I said I just wasn't hungry. And when I was compulsively overeating, I was just in complete denial about what I was eating and that it would matter on my body, you know. And it takes what it takes, you know. And when I work with sponsees, I just ask, are you willing to go to any length to recover? And it's just praying to hit bottom, because it's just, for us, the disease just keeps lying. You know, it can be massive lies or incremental lies, but it's still a disease of denial. And so the only way to get to the truth for me was to hit bottom and be willing to go to any length. And, you know, to turn my will and my life over to the care of God and pray only for knowledge of His will for me and the power to carry that out and then go be of service. To me, that's the disease and denial buster. And I always think of the word dis-ease as dis-ease, you know, how uncomfortable I was in my own skin. God bless everybody in your recoveries. With that, I pass. Thank you.
Thank you, Robin P. Penny C., please share with us.
Good morning, Kathy, and good morning, everybody on the line this morning. You know, this paragraph reminds me how many times the big book tells us how we as compulsive overeaters, ex-compulsive overeaters or recovered compulsive overeaters can help where nobody else can, not even psychiatrists or psychologists. And so I'm on page 18, and there is a solution, and this is all in italics, which we know was so important that in those days there was an extra charge to set the type in italics. And when Bill W. and the others who penned this book saw that something was extremely important, they were willing to pay the extra money to have it set like this. And it says, but the ex-problem drinker who has found the solution, who is properly armed with facts about himself, can generally win the entire confidence of another alcoholic in a few hours. Until such understanding is reached, little or nothing can be accomplished. And that's so true. Not even by doctors and psychiatrists and very learned people. You know, we, because we have the gift of recovery, we are able to, we know what people are talking about. In the family afterwards, and I don't have the page open, but in the family afterwards it says that psychologists have a hard time getting the alcoholic to talk without reserve. In other words, to talk honestly. And but we, because we tell our stories, and we can be the ones to help others. You know, I see it as a duty, an obligation, a delight to be able to do that. And just one more thing I want to read. I'm going to the page now. In working with others, it tells us, again, even more, the two first two paragraphs in this chapter are my very favorite, working with others. It says, carry this message to other alcoholics. You can help when no one else can. You can secure their confidence when others fail. And that's, they're talking to us, those of us who are recovered, that we can help when nobody else, not again, not all the learned people. So, you know, we are blessed. We are blessed to have so many of us that have been given this wonderful gift. And, you know, anybody that's out there struggling, you know, use us. I'm not saying that there aren't times, of course, when severe mental problems require a professional. I'm not saying that we can do it then. But to help with just someone's compulsive overeating, we know what it's like. And with that, I'll pass.
Thank you, Penny C. Laura R., please share with us.
Thanks, Kathy. This is Laura R., recovered compulsive overeater out in Colorado, Greeley, Colorado. Oh, my gosh, what a powerful meeting this morning. I'm just so overjoyed listening to just people's shares, and just gives me, I don't know, so much hope. But I was just thinking about honesty, yes, like, I did not know what was inside of me when I first got into the rooms in 2003. I had no clue. I had issues. I just thought it was about alcohol. I had no idea the depth of me. And I love, we uncover and discover and more truth about who we are. And if I, you know, it's funny, in 2003, do you think I could have put down the food? No way. I didn't even know that was a thing. You know, at the time I put down alcohol and drugs, and I was just like smoking like a chimney, and I was doing things with men, and I was eating, and I was drinking coffee. I was just doing, I just thought like this was recovery, and that was the best I could do at the time. And was it good enough? Yeah, at the time it was. And I think everything I had and that I was doing was just protection because I wasn't ready. And I remember when I first got in to the recovery room, someone said, it's like layering, it's like the, you know, an onion, and it's just going to, you know, keep just, the layers are going to come unfolding or, you know, get peeled off. And I had no idea. I can just cry. I had no idea what that meant. I'm like, okay, like, you know, and I remember I was just thinking about this, like what used to be a hunch or a gradual inspiration now becomes a working part of the mind. I remember I'm like, when's that truth going to happen for me? Like, you know, when, you know, just, it just gradually becomes a working part of the mind. This big book, you know, there's so much to learn and so much to discover, and it's not going to happen overnight. And I loved what that person, individual said, long road of reconstruction ahead. But was my time wasted in recovery in 2003 just by putting down alcohol? No way. It's what got me here right now. And in a couple of days, in December 17th, I have 1 year of food abstinence. 1 year. And I can't even believe it. But does that mean negate all the stuff that happened back in 2003? I mean, I have had to slowly but surely put down more and more and more and more to get to the truth. But here's what's so beautiful. And I love it. Again, I just never stopped fighting because it wasn't good enough. I'm like, wait a minute, still don't feel God. Like there's just still something blocking me. Oh, need to put down the smoking. Okay, still something blocking me. Oh, I have another issue. Still something blocking me. And one day it got me to the food. And I'm like, okay. And it took me years, 3 years to be able to put down food. And I fought for it and fought for it with God's help. Okay, God, okay. And then all of a sudden now I have almost a year. And what's so cool is within the year I had to put down coffee. And that was so scary. It was the last thing. But all of a sudden, what's so amazing is by doing the steps after I put the coffee down, oh my gosh, hello, God. Like, there you are. I feel safe and protected because there's nothing blocking me anymore. But God has always been there the entire time. And now when I put that down, I realized, ooh, rationalization and justification. I rationalize and justify everything. Like, nope. The result, you know, I don't need, the rules don't apply to me, you know? And so anyway, if you're in it and you don't, like, just don't give up hope, keep doing the deal. It does happen. That's one thing. I always had faith that I would get recovered, and it's happening today. And I just keep on coming back. And with that, I'll pass. Thanks.
Thank you, Laura R. We have time for two-minute shares. Who would like to take those?
Rachel P.
Okay, Lisa P., I think it was, and Beth M. is who I heard. Sorry, others who I did not hear. Lisa P., please go ahead.
That was Rachel P.
Sorry, Rachel. Go ahead.
That's okay. This is Rachel P., recovered compulsive eater in Denver, Colorado. And regarding psychological health, I saw a counselor in college when I was about 250 pounds and told her that I thought that I ate too much. And that was huge for me. My heart was racing. I hadn't told anybody else. I mean, of course, people could see on my body, but that was the first time I really started to get honest. And her solution was to give me the intuitive eating book and tell me to read it, and we never talked about food again. She didn't get it, but April of last year, I came to a therapist, and, I had lost 100 pounds, but I was still binging all the time on, quote-unquote, healthier foods, and I was miserable, and I just wanted it to stop, and I thought if I got to my goal weight, it would stop, but that was my disease talking, and the therapist that I came to last year is a recovered compulsive eater herself, and told me to go to OA, which I had known about, but hadn't wanted to go to. And I have been in recovery thanks to working with her and thanks to coming to OA. So there are people out there who get it, who know, and who want to help. But unfortunately, a lot of medical professionals don't understand what it's like to be a person in disease and addiction. And I'm so grateful. I think it was God's will that I found that therapist and that I found these rooms. And I am in school to become a mental health professional and to help other addicts because I get it and I want to help people who struggle. So there is hope, but unfortunately a lot of people don't get it, and I'm just really grateful that I found someone who does. So thanks, I'll pass.
Thank you, Rachel P. And Beth M., you'll be our last share. Please take 2 minutes.
Hi, Kathy. I think you might have heard Des M.
Oh, okay.
Is that? Yes. Okay. Thanks so much. Des M., recovered compulsive overeater.
Rachel from New Mexico, and so I think, I'm not sure who all you heard.
Oh, I'm sorry. What, Beth? Was there a Beth M.? Hello?
This is Des M. I think that may have been...
Okay, Des M., please go ahead.
Okay, I'm going to take it because I get to live in the program today and, get to actually show up and share even when I feel uncomfortable because it may not have been my name. But so I know I only have a minute. This paragraph touched my heart so much, and I can just vividly remember my therapist's office when I was in high school. I was 14, and I told her, I think I have an eating problem, and I'd been seeing her for like 3 years or something. And then I quickly rationalized it. Well, I only eat, like I told her a day where I like had one extra piece of something, and cause that's how my disease is. I'm an eater in isolation or with my fellows that compulsively eat like me, but I always ate the most by myself. So it never came up again until I got into the 12-step rooms. And that was, June 29th of 2012, I was introduced to the 12-step rooms by a therapist, actually, who had been seeing me for a year, and she was an amazing listener and didn't suggest that I had an issue with a substance until I brought it up. And that's a gift of being around these programs, as I'm learning how to be a better sponsor, a better listener. And when my sponsor lets me and my higher power have things revealed, and I'm learning to do the same, because when I got in here, I just wanted to tell people how to do it, and I still want that some days. So I'm really grateful to have this opportunity to share. Thank you so much for my recovery, and I hope everyone has a blessed day.
Thank you, Des M. And I'm sorry if I missed somebody else, but it's time to wrap up the meeting. We will now close with the reading from the Big Book on page 164 and follow that with the Serenity Prayer. Mo H., would you please read A Vision for You? Our book is meant to be suggestive only.
Yes, good morning. This is Mo H., recovered compulsive eater from Walnut Creek, California. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the records of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you.